This week, we have a special guest, Brother Cesar Rubio, the host of the new Masonic podcast, Masonic Muscle. Brother Cesar has a unique angle, personal health and fitness as it relates to Freemasonry and building our temple. Personal health followed by relentless push for success. Brother Cesar and I have an aggressive conversation, the likes of which we've never had before. Nothing is off the table in this no-holds-barred look at the problems affecting our craft today. What are those problems? There's a lack of discipline, a lack of commitment to do what many of us said we would do. We'll talk about all these issues and offer some potential solutions. Chief among those solutions, get off our butts and get to work. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is episode number 507. For those of you watching on YouTube, yep, this is a video version of the podcast this week. Why? Because we've got a great interview coming up with Brother Cesar Rubio, the host of Masonic Muscle, a podcast that is just phenomenal. And this week, as I mentioned in the opener, you guys are going to find that this is an aggressive conversation that we're going to have, and we're going to talk about some things that you might bring up some feelings that you have inside, and that's okay. I want to invite you all to bring your comments, questions, suggestions, all of that into the comments section right here on the YouTube video, as well as on our Facebook page. And, of course, if you're a member of the Craftsman Plus Facebook group, go ahead and leave your comments there based on the episode. I want to thank all of our producers, fellows, contributors, and our legacy partners for making this show possible and being able to basically bring all this Masonic education to everybody in the world who is interested in all of those things that we do. If you want to learn how you can help support this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. See how you can assist. Now, without any further delay, let's get into this awesome episode and interview with Brother Cesar Rubio. Check it out. All right, everybody, we are back. This week, we're really lucky to have a special guest. I said that there would be a kind of a surprise next week. Well, it's next week, and the surprise is that we've got the host of Masonic Muscle, Brother Cesar Rubio, on the program. Now, Masonic Muscle is an interesting Masonic podcast because, of course, it's education, but they've tackled some really interesting topics in the past. If you're unfamiliar, Masonic Muscle, just from their Apple Podcast preview page, it says that they're focused on strengthening your understanding of the mysterious origins of Freemasonry, its history, symbols, and at the same time, helping men get fit to become pillars of and strengthen their communities. So you will not only build a better body through intense exercise, but you will be working with the biggest muscle you have, your mind, strengthening the body, mind connection. So really excited to have you on. Brother Cesar reached out to me a couple weeks ago, and we were kind of going back and forth scheduling this, and I'm just happy that you were able to come on the show, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So first question is, what's your home lodge? What's your jurisdiction? Let's get to know you a little bit Masonically.
Yeah, my home lodge is Palm Springs Lodge number 693, state of California.
Awesome. How'd you get into Freemasonry?
I got into Freemasonry because I'm a big reader. And it was during about, I came upon a book by Graham Hancock called The Sign and the Seal. And that was the first time I ever, like, really read anything about Freemasonry and some of the origins and some of what they're supposed to be doing, right? Because that book was about looking for the Ark of the Covenant. And then from there, I read quite a number of other books, Wilm Hurst's book, The Meaning of Masonry. And after that, I can't remember exactly which, what was it? The Hiram Key. And other books subsequently began to come into, you know, my range of attention, and I read. And so through like the next 5 years, I would, you know, keep reading about Freemasonry. And so I was so impressed by what I was reading that eventually in 2000, I began to, you know, seek a lodge from where I was from. And one day at work, I was getting the mail in Palm Springs, and as I was driving down the street, I saw the symbol, and I went by, I knocked on the door, and that's how that started.
That's so awesome. You know, I got into Freemasonry through a book of Masonic tapestries that a friend of mine, an artist friend, showed me. I get so many guys that we come from different places, but it always seems to be there's this kind of core few books that people will recognize. I've never heard anybody say that they came to Freemasonry out of an interest from The Sign and Seal from Graham Hancock. Wonderful book. Love that book. I can see – and that book is interesting because it's kind of – it's really objective. And what's crazy to me is out of all of the books out there that have been written in the investigations and the History Channel shows and all of this stuff, I don't know why Graham Hancock's book seems to me to still be like – probably the best expedition to find this thing still. And it was from the 80s, right? I mean, it's incredible, incredible. So did you have a general interest in kind of biblical history, or was it the mystery, the Ark of the Covenant kind of thing? What drew you to that book?
Well, yeah, as a kid, my dad would always, not always, but from time to time, if the topic ever came up of ancient civilizations, ancient religions, going back to the Far East, and especially the Old Testament, because growing up Catholic, he growing up Catholic, his grandfather, my great-grandfather, was also steeped in this kind of like mystical lore. So I guess my great-grandfather had these books on the seals of King Solomon and things like that. So you know, from time to time, I would hear these stories of King David, King Solomon, Moses, all these extraordinary events that happened in the Old Testament. So when it came time to read about that, I was already prepped, so to speak. And so when I got a hold of Graham Hancock's book, which, by the way, I recommend to anybody, The Sign and the Seal, it just got my attention. And within a couple of days, I read it all. I had my notes and everything. And by the way, I do want to say that if you really think about it, guys, Masons and non-Masons, if you really think about it, because you always get asked the question, well, what are you guys supposed to be doing? What do you guys do in a lodge? And you get all these, you know, different answers. Well, if you pay attention and then you sort of connect the dots, all of the Freemasons, all of us are in the symbolic process of building King Solomon's temple. So there's the sign and the seal, and what was the temple supposed to be holding? The Ark of the Covenant. So that kind of tied it in for me, and that's where my interest lies.
I love it. That's also where my interest lies, too. You know, I got into Freemasonry because of this mystique and this lore, and then eventually when I started reading more, I was like, oh, wow, this is really interesting to me. But not just interesting, something that kind of spoke to your inner self, kind of, it was kind of like touching these intrinsic things inside of you that you already kind of felt, you already knew this pull to, you know, this kind of esoteric idea of Freemasonry. And, all these books really kind of tie that together. And I love that you mentioned the idea of the lodge and the temple, the body of man, King Solomon's temple. This is very apparent. You know, I think even on History Channel, it was about probably 10 years ago, maybe longer, they did a show where it was they quoted somebody. Somebody quoted a line of ritual. They said, you know, fitting our hearts and minds as living stones for that building not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. He said that on air, and that's fine. But what I found interesting was he said it right there. And it blows my mind that Masons today sometimes don't understand the whole idea of the allegory of Freemasonry and what that means to you. How do we make you a better man? It's like, everybody's like, oh, because we're a cool social club or we're a fraternity and we do this and we do that. But the lessons teach you how the story, it happened, and then you're supposed to, like, change it over to think about how that works on you, right? And so it just, some people, it just goes over their heads. It's wild. It's wild. But I'm glad it didn't go over your head. So what got you into podcasting with Freemasonry. What made you decide to get together and put together some kind of an educational resource here for Freemasons?
Good question. This podcast, without a doubt, is pandemic driven. You know, the lockdowns happened, and I already had this idea, and I kicked it around with some of my friends, like, hey man, you know, and really, really the driving point and the inspiration was you. I mean, I remember when you first came out, and that was at Lodge, because I'm a member of two lodges, Coachella Lodge number 476, which is in the same district. And one of my buddies, Joe, if he's out there, if he listens still, and he's like, hey, Caesar, have you listened to, you know, When's Came You podcast? And I'm like, what are you talking about? So, you know, that night I went home and I looked you up and I started listening to him. So the next time I lodged, hey, Joe, I did. And I listened to, you know, episodes because you were like back in 2014, 2015. Yeah. This had just started, you know, and so nobody knew about that. I'm like, yeah, that's what this is perfect. So we talk about them and we talk about the topics that you brought up. And I started thinking, yeah, you know what? We could do something like this. And now here's the pandemic. We get shut down and you and I and everybody has more time than we ever thought we're going to have to really sit down and contemplate, right? Cause in Freemasonry, we are admonished to contemplate the glorious works of the creation. Well, not only that, but what else can I do here? And so, I began to put this together. I began to kick some ideas around. And then through the, after working out with my buddy, Dave Perez, if he's out there listening, a shout out to you, brother. He's not a brother yet, but you know, he's been my best friend since we're 7 years old, and little things began to click. And finally I just said, you know what? I'm going to do it and I'm going to put this thing together, especially since it looks like we're about to start opening up and something more important than even Masonry, going back to lodges, that there's a lot of brothers that got even more severely out of shape. So I'm going to encourage all the brothers and non-brothers, get back in shape, and we should probably get back in shape and increase our level of health, no pun intended, right, meaning on the level, so that we can be the example and become the pillars of society before we go back to lodge. Not just hurry up, go back to lodge, and then just start doing the same stuff again. No, let's take care of our health. Let's become the examples, the leaders that we say we're supposed to be. Lead by example, get healthier, get stronger, and then now we have something to talk about extra when we go back to lodge. And that's how that started.
I love that. You know, I mean, so many times we focus on the mental as this thing. It's a philosophical game, right? But if we really are honest about it, it involves, you know, good mental health also involves a fair amount of physical health as well. Now, that's not to say that, you know, we've got brothers, you know, who might be in ill health or whatever, and that's fine as long as we're mindful, I think, of getting better and making right choices and taking those steps. I think that's really important. I know so many people through the pandemic, they called it, you know, COVID-19, and they joked it like everybody joined or got 19 pounds during COVID. I lost weight during COVID because I think I had a similar mindset to you, Brother Caesar, and that was that I established a routine quickly because I had to start working from home, and I knew I was going to go nuts. So I had a routine every day at 1:15 is my walk or my bike ride, every little thing. I would have planned reading time, but I think the really important thing was that when we're at home, especially for a lot of us who had to work from home, it was probably easier than say some of our brothers who were doing shift work or things of that nature, of course, right? But if you were like me working from home or the road or wherever, not in an office, it was kind of like back in high school, right? You would be in a desk all day long, but you had that scheduled activity time every day. It was discipline. And I found that to be really a key part of, I think, my mental well-being and physical well-being during the entire shutdown. So kudos to you for putting that together. And I think it's awesome to go back to lodge, right, when you haven't seen brothers in 6 months or more, and they look great. Like, oh my God, you look amazing, right? It's cool.
And then we gotta make some points of clarification here. I call it Masonic muscle. I like to weightlift. I like to do some strenuous exercise. But exercise can be just as simple as what you just said. Go out and walk 10, 15 minutes. Let the sun hit you. Get the fresh air. Drink more water. It could be as simple as that. Or if you want to take it to the next level or the next degree, right, you do that. And so there's a lot of correlation between the physical exercise that I'm talking about and our beloved craft. And guess what? No matter what route you're going to take, just walking or maybe some yoga, guess what? You're going to have to be committed. You're going to have to be disciplined. You're going to have to have this continuity, be consistent, because that's the only way you're going to get results. Same way in the lodge. If you want your lodge to be better, or if you want to get better, you're going to have to be committed, be disciplined, and be consistent, and work on your Masonic mind, mental muscle, and your Masonic knowledge, improve your Masonic knowledge, and work on your inner self. So it forced, for a lot of this stuff that happened, the pandemic, it forced a lot of us to go within. And when we went within, guess what, Brother Rob? A lot of people didn't like what they saw. So they just go out and they begin to lash out at everything else. Like what you're telling me about this article that you just wrote about. And all of a sudden people are giving you these crazy comments. That's a reflection of them. It's not what they is going on inside of them, not what you just wrote and stated as fact. So we were right, forced to go within for not one or two or three days, but months and months and months at a time. And now we are not used to being with ourselves. When Freemasonry, the majority of this journey is an individual journey, but together. You know what I mean? You got to do this together in order to help out.
That's all right. That's right. I mean, how many times, you can make that correlation as well. Like if, say 15 years ago, I had a goal, right? I wanted to lose 10 pounds. It was much easier to say to my wife, I want to lose 10 pounds, lose 10 pounds with me.
Right.
You know, teamwork. You said you work out with your bro. He's not a brother. He's still your bro, right? So you work out with him, right? And it's the teamwork. It's the camaraderie. You don't feel the pain when you're talking about cool stuff. You know, it just works that way. And it's the same way with Masonry, as you said. And, you know, I love that you mentioned the idea of dedication and being consistent.
Commitment, discipline, yeah.
Because this discipline and consistency is the key, I believe, to, probably every amount of success anybody's ever had. I mean, even if you're a failure, you're going to consistently fail, right? Like, until you make it. So, great point there. I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the difficult topics in Freemasonry today. And while we're talking, a good segue into this, I think, is going to be talking about discipline and consistency. With Freemasonry, I see as an organization, people will always – so I have expectations, and sometimes I've been accused of being unbrotherly for having an expectation. An expectation for somebody to show up and do something at the lodge, or an expectation of, showing up to do an event, or showing up, period, right? And oftentimes we have kind of this mentality that it's a volunteer organization, and how dare you have an expectation, you know? But in my eyes, I feel like, can we have some consistency and dedication that you volunteered for? I'd love to get some of your thoughts and opinions there.
Oh, I'm full of those. Especially, that's in my wheelhouse, and I'm glad you said that, because if you think about it right now, right, everyone's talking about the Great Reset and society and government and all around the world. How many Freemasons are talking about the reset within our very own fraternity? And it's just simple concepts like what you just said. And why? Why is that so difficult, guys? If you're talking about all this, I love the fraternity and I can't wait till the lodge opens back up so we can get back to life. Why? why all I kept hearing most of the time is why you can't make it to lodge, why you can't memorize stuff, why you can't do this, why you can't do that. Basically, you can't commit. Basically, you have no discipline. You want it all on a platter, but you don't want to, and you want this and this and this, and you want to, you want a better Masonic experience, but you don't want to take the responsibility and become a leader with this. Because let's face it, when people hear about a Rob's a Mason, they automatically somehow put you in a category of leadership. They do. They think Freemasons somehow are leaders. And so what you're talking about is exactly that right there. There is, and I have the same thing, and I run into the same situations. And my good friend, Dave Matthews, he's even more, you know, over the top with what you just said and what I'm saying. As far as, hey man, you're coming to lodge. These are the expectations. There's a dress code. Show up ready. If you have a role in the degree, show up prepared. That means practice all throughout the week, so you can show up prepared. Show your work, right? Your level of work. We're gonna forget little lines here, but overall you'll see that they began to work on it. And then, what about helping us organize certain events? What about having a better state of meeting? What about all of this? That all of that, guys, brothers that are out there, that takes work. That takes dedication. That takes consistency. And it should be special. I'm a firm believer. Freemasonry should be special. It should have always been special. But we are only a reflection of the society that we are immersed in. And guess what? A lot of society is apathetic and complacent. So we have to deal with that. That's why all these new lodges are forming. In California, where I don't know how many lodges have formed already over the last 2 or 3 years, like 20, because a lot of those Masons have broken away. Yeah. And forming their own lives because they want the better experience. They want to work harder. They want all of that.
Yeah, you get the 2 or 3% of an active lodge who do everything, who pick up the slack, right? And they're like, you know what? I think I'm all done picking up the slack here when I can do this same amount of work that I'm doing with 10 other guys and blow a 300 plus member lodge out of the water with a 12 member lodge. In almost every single category, whether that's social, community activism, charity work. I mean, it's crazy. I think one of the things that turned me onto this idea was the fact that we're not actually limited. We're not actually limited to what we can do in a successful lodge, except by the bylaws. And so I read years ago, we read, the book by Hodapp. Well, he edited the book, Knights of the North's A Laudable Pursuit, a response to Dwight L. Smith's work. And in it, he laid the groundwork for some really exciting things. And then what we started to see were all these lodges start forming, these quote-unquote affinity lodges. But they really weren't affinity lodges to say, like, hey, it's not a lodge of photographers, okay, or a lodge of, you know, dune buggy drivers. This is a lodge of active, like really active guys, and not to say super active, like they go to a different meeting every night, but guys that are invested in their job in the lodge. They really believe in it. And so we see one of my favorite things was I heard a rumor that the Grand Secretary of California, or perhaps somebody in the Grand Lodge, had a business card. And on the back of it, it basically had like 5 steps to forming a new lodge. And the Grand Lodge of California has done a tremendous job in allowing the freedom for more men to create a new lodge. And so that takes, it takes a lot of balls to do that.
Say it, brother.
At the Grand Lodge level, because there's a lot of Grand Lodges out there that actually have very stringent regulations about starting a new lodge. And that makes it difficult, and I would say almost unfair, especially when you've got lodges who, let's just say, in certain states you have to have at least 20 guys, and you have to do all your own work in-house to get the charter. Now, an existing lodge can do none of those things, and they can have anybody come in to do their degree work when they have a candidate. So they put so much pressure on a brand new lodge, and I get that. We should, prove our mettle a little bit. But it is interesting, right? When you actually say, when you actually enable brothers to form new lodges, that's pretty incredible. I think the Grand Lodge of California has got their mind in the right spot in those aspects. I think it's phenomenal.
And you're right, and it's come at a cost, at a high cost, because we've learned our lessons, just like all other Grand Lodge jurisdictions are beginning to learn their lessons. They're beginning to listen to what we're saying, and now they got to deal with that. And a lot of that has to do with one thing and one thing only, holding each other accountable. Everything that you've been talking about come down to that basic element, right? And so a lot of us have become the point outside of the circle. Because we refuse to hold each other accountable and we refuse to speak the truth. We cannot stop speaking the truth, even if people get pissed off. That's what it's doing. That's what you're telling me when you're talking about, you know, hey, I have standards and they've accused me. Well, they've accused me of being elitist and every single thing. And there came a point where I embraced it. And I said, you know what? Cause I was fighting it. No, brothers, you know, I was trying to be brotherly. Right, we're all trying to be brotherly, but you know what? One of the three principal tenets is truth, and truth is the foundation of all these other ones. And to be good and true is the first lesson we are taught in Masonry. And guess what, guys? The truth hurts. So, holding each other accountable. I've been held accountable. I didn't like it, but I knew it was correct. And these things are coming at a cost. There's going to be more shrinkage. Right now, we have 40,000 members in California. That's it. And we haven't stopped the bleeding. I hear so-and-so that, well, you know, we're about to turn the corner. If it hadn't been for this pandemic, I didn't see that. I saw people continue to demit. I saw people continue to leave, not come back. So there is no, until we begin to understand that we cannot be all things to all people. And your lodge cannot be all things to all people because you just lose focus. And if you go to take that to exercise, if you start one routine today and then tomorrow you start another routine, you're never going to get any results. So you got to commit and you got to focus. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to eat. This is how many hours I'm going to work, you know, work out. This is how many hours I'm going to sleep. This is how many, all these steps that we know that over time, they worked. They work time and time again. They're time tested. That's what we got to do.
It's interesting that you mention this and you said time and time again, because when I think about, so when I was growing up, I was really strict and I loved playing rugby with my friends, you know, high school and in, you know, college and doing all these things. And I just remember when my son a couple of years ago was like, oh, I'm going to start running or whatever. I'm going to run in the morning. I was like, cool, man. And then he would go get breakfast. And I'd be like, no, don't eat your breakfast before you go run. He's like, right. I got to run on an empty stomach. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, why? I'm like, you think a caveman just got up and ate the chicken from last night? He had to go catch that stuff. So go catch your breakfast. But the point I'm trying to make here is that, like, if we really look at success and scheduling time and dedication to things, if you can kind of reel that back and look at, you know, historically, in terms of fitness anyway, and the way we progress as humans, you can see a pattern of how we work best and the model for success and, you know, survival. And you can apply that directly to today, even though we have things like, you know, office work and other things. But that those same principles, I think, hold true.
Well, you just said another keyword for us, right? Progress. Where, you know, Freemason is a progressive science. And in working out, you progressively add resistance to continue to get the results that you want. Well, guess what? Now you got to reapply that to Freemasonry, and we got to continuously put the progressive resistance on our brethren to say, hey, guys, we have to continue to improve. Freemasonry is excellence in everything we do. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that. And when we got hit with the eclipse of excellence and observing the craft, and I know there's a lot of brothers out there all observing the craft, and observing the craft pointed a lot of things out that we knew was right there. We knew that. We knew the eclipse of excellence and, you know, dress your best. Oh, yeah, you know what? I love it. All of a sudden you become master and you say, hey, guess what? We're going to start dressing our best. What? You You were serious about that?
Right.
Yeah, I'm serious about that. Put on a tie and put on, you know, something decent. If you don't have a suit, we'll work with you, but we're gonna raise the bar. Well, why? Because Freemasonry is special. That's why.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember the, so as I was getting ready to go into the East, I got this talking to. These older past masters would start pulling me aside, and you started getting like these weird comments. And the comments would be like, hey, you know, Robert, we used to be a tuxedo lodge. And I was like, well, you're a guy that I always kind of pinged as being a jeans and button up denim shirt kind of guy, because you're always like, you know, in your Harley wear and you come from work because you're an HVAC guy. Would you be okay with that? Like, does that put you out? Like, I mean, I was so fresh at the idea of demanding a dress code in my lodge, which is really a blue collar lodge, you know, a lot of HVAC guys, retired military guys. And, they said, well, we used to be a tuxedo lodge. That's what we were used to. And then like one master relaxed it and we just haven't gone back. And I was like, okay, cool. We're a tuxedo lodge. You would have thought that, I mean, I did something egregious. I mean, it was crazy the amount of resistance I got at first, but then it was just habit. And then I said, hey guys, stop hanging out in the back of the building. If you guys are going to do cigars or something, go in the front on the main, because we were on a main street. I said, go hang out on Main Street, right in front. We have no signage out there. People walking by, seeing these guys in tuxedos, talking, having a good time, looking like leaders of the community, right? And that caused good community relationships. Like all of a sudden the business owners, local community, like Chamber of Commerce people would come by. Hey, what's up? You know, I work across the street at the tax office. What do you guys do? You know, it was just so interesting to see the dynamic shift, right? Dress to impress. But again, we have that, people are always kind of turning the clock back or turning the dial back rather, saying, oh, well, it's the internal, not the external qualifications that should make a man a Mason. And it's like, I think you're using that incorrectly. That argument doesn't really fly here. If you look at why we ask somebody to dress up.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when I used to hear stories about, hey, I used to hear the older members, right? I was going to the chairs, and hey, you know, Brother Ryan, yeah, oh yeah, you know, I was past master. Oh, I feel sorry for you. You know, oh, you know, I feel for you. That does a disservice to everything we do, because now you're lowering the actual what's supposed to be prestigious. We're supposed to be earning this by merit alone, right? That's according to Anderson's Constitution, that the master and the senior and junior wardens will be elevated to that position by merit alone. But all of a sudden we're saying disparaging remarks and we're trying to be funny, but no, it doesn't work. And now all of a sudden you become master and you get hit with these challenges that you're talking about. I got the same thing. I don't know how many times you've been master of your lodge. I've been master of my lodge several times. But each time, until you finally reach your threshold, and you're like, you know what, enough. You're either going to step in line and get in line, or just tell us you're going to. And we don't do that because we're so afraid of them leaving. We're so afraid of them leaving and what it's going to cause, all this stuff. And once you release that, fear, and once you just say, you know what, you draw your sign in the line. If you're going to, I asked you, you said yes, and now all of a sudden, so that begins to give strength. And right now, more than anything, as we're seeing this pandemic, here comes the second wave. And here, we don't know who to trust. And the rhetoric is off. And the logic is off. And more than anything, we need strong leadership. Well, why can't we have strong leadership in our lodge? Why? Why not? What are we afraid of? If everyone's going to leave, you know what? That was a blessing. Because now you can begin to talk to the guys that really want to form a lodge and form your lodge. But we're so afraid of failing. We're so afraid of telling everybody the truth. And by telling the truth, I don't mean that, hey, you idiot, you know that. No, just the truth. Like what you said, hey, this is the dress code. This is what it's going to be. And get in line. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really that simple. And, you know, I talk about it all the time, and as somebody, you know, and you know too, right, running a podcast, having a public voice, sometimes we do, there's a lot of kind of dancing around the issue and trying to be the nice guy. Because the thing is that we're supposed to have this harmony. And I think that's all well and good. But for me, I'm always left asking this question, and this is a really big one for me. It's using an excuse of harmony to not address issues. And so this goes far and wide, from a dress code to a brother of your lodge posting racist propaganda to a brother of your lodge consistently proselytizing his religious beliefs within the confines of a lodge, but the lodge looks the other way because he's a past master or he's a past grandmaster, or, you know, nobody's above the code of the lodge. Nobody's above the rules of the lodge. And we do this thing all the time. You know, I wrote this article, I think, that I'll probably read on the show next week or something, but the gist of the article is to basically watch out for brothers who are already in our craft, because we can't do anything about it now until they break the law, or also watching out for brothers coming through the West Gate who basically support, share, or otherwise align themselves with organizations that fit the definition of domestic terrorism by the FBI and the Office of Homeland Security. The idea here is to say they're here. They're not going anywhere unless they, you know, out themselves, and they usually don't. But it may shock some people that Freemasonry has its bad eggs too, and we do, and they get through, and they're here. But the problem is that when you try to address this, somebody goes, well, that's divisive, or you've politicized the issue. Look, I'm not sure what's political about being in the Ku Klux Klan. It's not political. Somebody in the KKK needs to GTFO of the fraternity, right? I mean, they have no place here. And, I won't bat an eye at saying that. I don't think anybody else would either, but, you would think, by the response I got from this particular article, that it's a problem to say that out loud. It's being divisive. Why do we lean on these concepts of harmony or, you know, holding the secrets of a brother? Why do we lean on those in place of doing the right thing? Thomas Paine has a quote that I'm going to give you right now. It is an affront to truth to treat falsehood with complacence. And we just do so much of that. I mean, not all of us. Like, it's a minority. But in an organization that prides itself on excellence, we shouldn't even have a minority. We shouldn't be okay with it.
I got two words for you as to why it happens. And that's a good segue into that, because that will entail accountability and responsibility on all of us to begin to really weed all of this out. And they just don't want to do it. They don't want to do it. They just want to go to lodge, do what they used to do, expect a different result. Don't give them any responsibilities. So you know what. Strong leadership in a lodge and any organization begins to do to all their employees, or for us members, is something really good. And that is, they begin to pay attention to what you're saying, and then they begin, the leader, and then they begin to have an uncanny ability to begin to take away all of your excuses. And so if you think of of the quiver, and each arrow being an excuse, little by little, they begin to take one more arrow out of your quiver, and another one. And so pretty soon you have no more excuses in your quiver. No more arrows as your excuse. This is why. You know, this is why, just shooting it wildly out there, because they don't want to take responsibility and accountability. Because what is everything that our lectures, charges, our installation ceremony, and our Masonic codes about? It is about accountability, responsibility, discipline, commitment, and when something goes wrong, that's why the Masonic code is there. That's why those charges are there, so that we have a way to correct this. And unfortunately, we take it to the extreme because, hey, you know, you shouldn't have gone at him like that, because did you whisper good counsel in his ear? Man, I hate that one. I hate that one. How many times do I got to just whisper good counsel in his ear before I got to start choking this brother because he doesn't get it? Right? I mean, something's got to happen to where, figuratively and symbolically and allegorically, right, we're choking him, but we're, God damn it, you know, no means no, and get out, you know, you didn't dress up again, and you're bad. You know, you're just destabilizing the whole foundation of Freemasonry. And the worst part is that we're allowing it. We're allowing it.
Yeah, we allow it under the guise, I think, of just like, oh, it's okay. You know, he's allowed to operate under a different code of you know, truth for himself, you know. And it's like, okay, I get it. But as you said, it does destabilize a lodge because, and perhaps it's not correct to say that the example per se of dressing up for a lodge is not an apple spoiling the bunch. However, it took just one time for me being chastised when I wore shorts to a lodge practice. I was not allowed to go into the lodge room. So I never wore shorts to a lodge ever again. One time, okay? Yeah. And I was in my Masonic youth, right? I was freshly minted Master Mason. And just like in childhood, you know, your parents give you values and things to live by. And so your Masonic mentors do the same thing. When you're going against the lodge, it rumbles that foundation. And I think that's a big problem. And then that gets seen, and then the behavior is repeated by others. So it does have the potential to, you know, as the people say, you know, it can be a cancer to the lodge.
Well, and those are the brothers, Brother Rob, but those are the brothers that throw out, hey, you know, you're going to ruin the peace and harmony of this guys. Well, guess what? Here's a revelation for all the brothers. Every time I've heard that statement, what about the peace and harmony in the lodge? There's no peace and harmony in the lodge. When they've thrown that statement out, it's because there's already been no peace and harmony in the lodge. But they're throwing it out there as a way for you to not begin to point things out, because more than likely, when you begin to point them out, all roads lead back to that one person, you know, that. Yeah. And that's what happens. And the peace and harmony. Well, we really have to hold our brothers accountable and say, no, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. I mean, I tell my kids all the time, go clean your room. And then they don't know where to start. And I say, you just start. And they say, well, how? I said, well, first get comfortable with this idea that your room's probably going to look even more messy than it is right now.
Yeah.
Begin to clean it. It gets messy before it gets cleaner, right? And it's the same way with lodge. We start pulling things out, start dusting things off, you know, reiterating the code, reiterating your master's rules for the year, or whatever the, you know, traditions of your lodge might be. And then we want to stick to those things. And really, the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to raise the bar. You're going to end up with a place, like, nobody wants to go to your lodge when it's dank and smelly and in disrepair and all of these things, right? Nobody wants to go. And it's the same way when those things kind of correspond to attitudes in the lodge, I think. So if you repair those things, it becomes a place to go to hang out.
There is a definite sense of There is no peace and harmony, and what is this confusion in the temple? There has been confusion in the temple now for 20, 30, 40 years. And Grand Lodges are finally beginning to react. But guess what, guys? Grand Lodge is us. We are Grand Lodge, and Grand Lodge is us. I just saw the resolutions from California Grand Lodge for this year's communication, and one of them, right off the bat, maybe because of this pandemic and so many members were just hammering and ripping our district inspectors and our AGLs, like, why the hell are you, how can you tell us, you know, the Grandmaster can't tell us not to meet, and this, we're autonomous and we have these rules and we can, you know, and all this. So all of a sudden, this resolution, the very first one says, basically reiterating that every lodge is autonomous and has the power and authority to govern itself with accordance to common sense and reason. So these things, unfortunately, we have to get kicked in the head, and most of the times more than once, for us to finally to get, this is the stuff we need to hear, right? I mean, hey, get your ass up, do some exercise, you know, increase your level of health. If you're a Mason, stop complaining, go to lodge, see where you can first improve yourself, strengthen yourself, and stop being the point outside the circle and being the point within the circle. Improve yourself, strengthen yourself, and then see how you can help the three brothers that you said earlier, this, you know, this podcast that are doing everything. Go see how you can help them. And you know what, guys? It's good. I like pointing out problems. I do. But I spend about 20% of the time pointing out the problems and then 80% of the time trying to figure out the solution. So there's another one for you, brothers. You know, all those sideliners that are armchair quarterbacks. Guys, we just need to be the leaders that we promised us. We always promise further light in masonry. And look, hence your podcast. Because you felt somewhere along the line that there wasn't enough light, further light in masonry. So this is how you're going to give it to us, which we've been receiving it, right? In our own ways. And here's another podcast, Mind Masonic Muscle. I'm punching you in the head. You know, gay, you know, wake up. This is what we got to do. There you go. But because the problem, we have not followed through on our promise to give our brothers further light.
Well, it's interesting. I was you mentioned Andrew Hammer's book, Observing the Craft. If that is a hammer, like no pun intended, okay, the velvet hammer is going to be The Craft Driven Lodge by Dan Horinko. And one day we were at Camp Mason.
Love that book.
Yeah, it's a great book. I was hanging out with Dan, listening to him to give this great lecture at Camp Masonry. I'm sitting there on the park bench, and I'm thinking, like, I hadn't read Dan Horinko's work before, and I didn't know what to expect. I'm like, you know, he's a seasoned Mason. He's in the legal profession, does some really cool stuff. I didn't know where he was going to come from. And I kind of pegged him as, because he's a little bit, he's retired now, right? So he's older guy, and I had this kind of idea that he would be in this different kind of mold. I thought I was going to disagree with him big time, but he said, as I'm going to paraphrase, as a worshipful master, you're told that it's your job to impart wise and serious truths. And he goes, so if you were a master of your lodge and you didn't impart wise and serious truths, you didn't do your job. Like, full stop. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. Like, I always call Andrew Hammer the hammer, and I call Horinko the velvet hammer. A little bit softer of a message, but like, it's your job as the master of the lodge to be the leader, to give, again, the Masonic light, impart wise and serious truths. What are those wise and serious truths? You know, that's debatable as to the education of the lodge and what you guys all want to talk about, philosophy or his history or how those things work, or even, you know, bringing in some outside educators from local colleges or whatever. But the light is lacking, which is why we did all this. And this last year, it was crazy to watch all of the educators suddenly, like, effervescence, just rise to the top to save the day. Education was everywhere on Freemasonry Online. Groups like Winding Stairs and Refracted Light and California Masons, and all of these places had all of these great Zoom lectures. And I don't know if it's because Grand Lodges like to keep I mean, we do like to keep business in-house, right? But I just never see the Grand Lodge say to those educators, to their Masonic committees, or like, for instance, Dagger Rodriguez does the Illumination Series lectures at his lodge. And those are huge. He complained the other day that he only had 20 guys show up for this. He didn't complain. He just said it wasn't surprising. We only had 20. And I'm thinking, 20 guys? That's huge.
But you know, yeah, go ahead.
I just don't see, I would love to see some kind of Masonic authority say to the lodges out there providing this stuff or to those educators, hey man, thank you for keeping our members engaged and working through this pandemic and staying interested in Freemasonry. Because largely it's a thankless job to be a Masonic educator. Nobody says, or for you, for instance, nobody says, hey, thanks for kicking him in the ass, right? I mean, some people do, but I mean, it was a couple months ago, I went to Massachusetts and I'm a member of under that grand jurisdiction. And it was a total kick in the head, like you had said earlier. They gave me an award for 500 episodes of a podcast. And I was so dumbfounded, literally speechless. I must look like a deer in the headlights because, like, it was just incredible. So you just started your podcast not long ago. But right off the bat, man, Brother Caesar, I just want to say thank you, really, for starting some more education out there.
You're welcome, and it's my pleasure. It's one of my passions, like yours, obviously, and the guys at the Round Table and a bunch of the other guys that we know have a podcast out there. I will say this, because you made an observation about Grand Lodges, you know, not going out there and thanking. And we are Grand Lodges us. And maybe that'll help. Maybe if the Grand Lodge gives recognition to these guys. But I will say this. Number one, you mentioned Dago, and he said, hey, there's only 20 people. Back in 2010, when I was master the first time, I started Masonic education in our lodge, there was none. And my whole attitude was that if I got 5 people, that was a complete and total success.
Yeah.
I was ecstatic. Why? Because, and I don't mean that in a joking way. No, I mean it because one of Andrew Hammer's and many others before Andrew Hammer, he just pointed it out again, was we want quality, not quantity. And so I really took to that. And it applies to everything we do at our lodge as well. We still want quality, not quantity. And so we got to keep that in mind. Another thing was, the other point I wanted to make was that, yes, Masonic education increased because we had nothing else to do. So let's get on YouTube, let's do podcasts, and let's increase it. That still does not address the overarching ailments of the fraternity, and that is us going within. And because I'm telling you right now, all that's going to happen is, let's just say tomorrow we're fully open, this thing is over, and there's no more restrictions, and there's no more restrictions in sight. There's no more waves coming, and all this weird confusion, and yes, no, no, yes, so maybe, we don't know, but you still, right? Okay, let's just say that happens. Guess what? The majority of us brothers are going to go back to lodge and do the same thing, fall back into our old habits and expect a different result. There might be an increase in attendance because everyone's excited, but in 2 or 3 months, we're going to go back down to the same. No one's going to want to volunteer. No one's going to want to memorize stuff. They're going to start telling us again why they don't want to dress up. So it's got to be us. We got to go within. So all the Masonic education that we give is awesome. I like it. I really do. But I do believe that is not real. It's just like me and my buddy going to the, we call it the dungeon, right? In my garage, I got all kinds of equipment. We go there once or twice a week, and we do it. We get in there, we sweat. It's 120 right now back where I live. And in that garage, geez, we're sweating, we're huffing, we're puffing, the chalk's flying, we're clanging the weights, and we're putting in the work. Where is that in lodge? Where is the work in lodge? If we're symbolically and maybe, you know, really building in the process of building King Solomon's temple, Well, then I'm sorry to say we're doing a pretty crappy job. We got to get to work, brothers. We got to go into the quarries. We gotta find better stones, not broken stones. You know, I've had prospective members come in and you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months, you know, down the road, because we don't give out applications right away. As I'm talking to them and I'm hitting them with the same, why do you want to be a Mason? Why do you want to be a Mason? Why do you, over. And finally, well, I don't know. I feel lost. Guess what, Brother Rob? That guy doesn't get an application. And that guy gets told, you come back when you have fixed yourself and become good. Because we take good men and make them better. We don't take a somewhat good man, you know, a stone that's cracked, and then we try to mend it and then use it. No, we need that stone to be in, you know, complete, workable. And that's what we need to do. And I hope my message got across, but it's going to take work.
I absolutely agree with you. We have said many times we take good men and make them better. And I think my buddy Nick Johnson once said, and I think he was quoting somebody else, he said, maybe it should be we take better men and make them good.
I agree.
You know, it is interesting. Either way you look at it, we're not yes, we have great conversations that might equate in some respects to some sort of men's group. Yes, I talk with my brothers about my feelings. Yes, I talk with my brothers about things like that. But, you know, we're not a men's group, like, you know, just for that type of thing. We're not here to coddle you, really, right? We had one of my good friends, Brother Van Vanderhoff, some brothers listening might know him. He once told me, you know, he was a master chief, and he said that he had a student of his in the service who was not doing so well, and he kept on giving him like punishment duty work, and this kid's mom called Van on the phone, and she said, you know, it's your job to make a man out of my son. And he said, no, it was your job to make a man out of your son. I make him into a soldier. Right? And he hung up on her. And that kid, you know, who knows what happened to him. But in that same respect, it's not Masonry's job to, you know, make you a man. It's Masonry's job, I think, to make you a better man. Obviously, we need solid leadership within the craft with accountability. You know, I don't want to beat that dead horse, man, but when you start talking about accountability, I just go to that first level of the onion. I'm like, oh, we don't want to address problems because they'll leave and then what? They don't pay their dues and I'm scared because I won't get their $10.50 a year? You know, what's the deal? It's crazy.
There should have never been a Mason to begin with, but, you know, on the other hand, we should have told them, you know, our expectations to begin with. And then we begin to see who's going to, you know, because we can all lie and we can do and say and do what it takes to get in. But once you're in, we're going to continue to see you. And then, okay, you know what, you know, you are not what we thought. So do what you're going to do. If you're going to demit, and you got to have those strong conversations, right? I mean, Sonic Muscle, you have to have those strong conversations. And, you know, I was listening to your podcast. You got interviewed on The Occult of Personality. That was a great interview. And you began to talk about the edicts from Grand Lodge of Georgia and Grand Lodge of Tennessee. And you started getting into them, digging into them. I was like, oh, hell yeah, man. Rob's letting them have it. Yes. And then you held back. And I'm like, oh. Because why did I say that? Because this is what they need to hear. They need to, whether it's you or me or whoever, because what they did was wrong. I agree. And so now is not the time to pull back the reins and say, wait a minute, you know. And you mentioned some good things. Overall, you said what you had to say. But we all do it. We all begin to say, and then like, oh, wait a minute, you know. Let me hold back. Yeah. And I don't think within Freemasonry we should be doing that, because the craft, let's just say we accept, and by the way, you know, you really hit on the esoteric, and you dig the esoteric. You're a man after my own heart. I'm all about the esoteric. So the more esoteric stuff within the lodge and you know, in a practical, good way, the better. But if we take it back and say, let's just say we accepted the operative Mason's origin, right, which I'm not fully convinced, but let's just say we did. And then we said, you know, we're going to mimic them. Guess what? Those guys worked hard every freaking day. They were good, you know, from sun up to sun down. And they better know their craft, because the edifices that they were building were going to house either those Catholic monks or the kings or the queens or the pope or whoever it was going to be, high dignitaries. So these things better not crumble, because they're going to go back after the Masonic Guild and say, hey, you guys are just, what kind of shoddy work?
Right.
Crap is this? Well, that's what we're in. That's the situation that we're in, where my friends are saying, hey, that guy's a member of your lodge? What kind of crap is this? What kind of shoddy work is that? You guys actually allow him to be a Mason? I thought you guys have rules. I thought you guys were leaders. How come you guys haven't, not penalized him, but, you know, reprimanded him? How come you guys haven't, you know, put him on a timeout? Well, you know, what do we tell him? Well, you know, masonry is a gentle science. There's another one I hear. You know, what the hell? Where did you come up with that? It's just a gentle science. But anyhow, I wanted to you know, tell you that I did listen to that podcast, and with the Grand Lodge of Tennessee and Georgia did, I remember that very well, because our grandmaster at the time was M. David Perry, and he came to visit our lodge in Coachella, and we asked him about that, and he's like, man, because he was there. He was there when they issued that, and he's like, what the hell?
It's crazy.
It happens all the time, right? And we're trying to not have it happen with us, but it does.
Yeah.
It does. And, you know, each lodge is autonomous. Yeah, I cannot tell, we cannot tell the other lodges what to do. They can't tell us what to do. But if the leadership is strong and the leadership has the strength to make difficult decisions, because that's leadership. Leadership is all about difficult decisions, the unknown, but you got to pull the trigger and you got to fail and fail fast so you can get to the success that you're going to get to. And if that means losing some members along the way, so be it.
That's what we recently were talking about, some resolutions with the Grand Lodge for our upcoming communications in October was, what if that means we lose some people? We thought, well, if we're making a sandwich and somebody wants to cut the crust off and a little bit of the sandwich goes with it, okay, it's fine. We still got a better sandwich out of this.
I got a better one for you. I got a better one for you, Rob. So my first year as master in 2010, I finally decided to raise the dues. And you know what happens when you want to raise the dues? The boo. Very first argument, yeah, boo, number one. And this very first argument is...
I'm on a fixed income.
Yeah, and I heard your cast about that. I heard your podcast about that. Just, you know, all of this stuff, right? I remember that. But it happened to me, so I knew exactly. What, like, oh. So the very first argument was, you know how many members we're going to lose? Now, let me backtrack. The 4 or 5 years as I'm going to the chairs, where we have enough officers to conduct business, right, and do ceremonies for second, third degrees. But the sideliners, we might have had 5 sideliners. And some of them were not even members of our own lodge. So when they said that, it, you know how many members we're going to lose? And I was like, well, we only have 5 sideliners, so what members are we going to lose? Like, how is that going to affect us? And so they kind of reeled back. They're like, well, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that some of these members, I don't even know who you're talking about, brother, because I've never seen them in lodge, and I have yet to take a look at the roster. So some of these names that you're throwing out, I have no idea, but I do know one thing. They have voted with their feet. Unless they've been infirm or whatever, or their situation is really where they can't make it, then I understand that. And there were some. But the majority, no. They just... We're not making, so there I am. I'm part of their membership retention committee. I'm calling them up. Hey, brother, you know, and I heard it all. I heard it. And from that point on, I was desensitized. You know what? If we got to suspend them for non-payment of dues, we do it. If we got to do this, if they're going to leave because we're going to raise the dues, because we're being fiscally responsible, and practical because we want to do some more stuff for our members. And they got, and guess how many we lost? We raised the dues. Some people came. We passed the resolution. We changed our bylaws and we lost two members.
Yeah. I mean, I had to laugh because as you're talking about this, I had my own revelation into what you're talking about. And it's like, who am I losing? I'm not going to lose the people who are here.
That's what I said. That's what I told them. I'm like, who am I losing? You know, and that's what got them reeling back. They're like, oh, well, you know, no. Are you going to pay your dues?
Listen, the people you're going to lose already left.
Already left, voted with their feet.
You don't see them. Yeah, they're not there. That's hilarious.
So
what a great observation.
You got to make these observations. You got to use your mental muscle. We get introduced to grammar, logic, and rhetoric, but very rarely do we use it. And so,
as you say that, I'm like, deep inhale through the nose.
I'm going to get you going because, you know, and I'm passionate about this. I am. I've been a member for 20 years, you know, and I've been through all the majority of the time. I'm the secretary now. So I'm still serving, right? You're still serving. And we want to make a difference. The challenge is trying to get other members or prospective members to see that, or prospective members to be initiated into a new culture, a winning culture, a culture of excellence, not a culture of mediocrity, which is what we were introduced to. Yes. And nobody wants to say that because, oh, that's so un-Masonic. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You don't pay $1,000, $1,500 Rotary. So, you know, and so you get mediocrity. No, you're paying your $1,500 a year so that you can get networks and meet other business owners and get your $1,500 or more back. So why aren't we doing that for our future members or current members?
I don't go out and I don't, you know, pick up fly by night on demand services that have no programming. I'm not interested in and pay them $15 a month. Right.
Right.
I pay money to companies for a monthly product that I actively use and love. And it's the same with Masonry. Like, I love the idea of monthly dues, in fact, for that same reason. A, I don't have to worry about people coming up with hundreds of dollars at Christmas time. That sucks. You're right? And so, like, recently our dues went up $12 a year because in our – In my lodge, our dues go up $12 a year, or it's $12 a year, but we calculated that around CPI and inflation. So $12 a year. And somebody went, oh, my God, I'm paying you right now $33 a month for my lodge. Now I have to pay another $12? And I'm like, no. just one extra dollar a month. So now you're paying $34 a month. And they're like, oh, that's easy. Yeah, it is. You know, what is that? It's like three trips to Starbucks with you and your wife.
So what you're talking about,
you and your significant other, right?
What you're talking about right now is, again, going to our complacency and lack of discipline. What you're talking about is people not having enough control of their finances to save $120. A whole year for your dues. And I don't hate pointing it out like that because that's the reality. And also that, I'm going to show up late. So you have no control over your week and your time. You just fly by the edge of your seat. And also it looks like that's how you do it with your wallet. Because if it was really, and part of that comes back to us. The lack of leadership, strong leadership, because we'd be demonstrating that and we'd be talking about that. Hey, brothers, and I used to with my officers, guys, this is the dues. Have you paid your dues? Do you need help? Are you setting aside, you know, enough to pay your dues at the end of the year? And by the way, you're going to pay not only your dues, but $10 or $20 extra so that we can help out anybody else that needs it, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. As us, because there's going to be one or two members that will need it. And if we don't use it for that, guess what? We'll buy ourselves some steaks and we'll have man cave night and we'll invite everybody and we'll all partake. But this is kind of the way that I try to get the members to take more responsibility and accountability. But what you're talking about is so easy to understand, but what's not being talked about is like, hey, brother, so lodge dues are $120 a year. So you're trying to tell me you can't set aside $10 a month so that by the end of the year you have your $120?
Well, that's what kills me is, like, you get that argument from the guys who have the NFL Sunday ticket.
I heard you say that. That was good. That's true. That's true. I said, but that's the value. See, they believe that they're getting value. This is more valuable than my Masonic Lodge dues. And guess what? I'm going to lie to my brother when I tell him. I'm going to lie to him. I'm going to invent whatever it is because I need a break. But guess what? I got the NFL ticket. Red zone, NFL red zone. Invite all the family over. I bought hot dogs and hamburgers for everybody too, and chips and beers, and and Costco had a sale and all that. Every weekend, you're just throwing, $50, $100 extra, and I know this, and then you're telling me I don't have $120 to pay my dues.
Right. I always laugh, right? I had a friend of mine named Todd. Todd is awesome. And he was a young guy, no credit. So he asked me one day, would you, go to the bank with me and do the thing where, like, you give the bank $500 and then I get to draw on it and then I pay it back and then you get your $500 back after, 6 months so that I can build credit? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that for you, Todd. I love you, man. Let's go. So I do that. And Todd's doing it. He's making his payments. I don't care, right? That money is gone out of my pocket. I just looked at him when I gave him the money. I said, when are you going to pay me back? He gave me a date. The date came and went. And I saw Facebook posts. New Vizio TV. Blu-ray player. But you know what? I didn't say anything. And the next time I saw him, I was going to go, hey, man, how about that $500? Because I'm not rich. Man, I don't have $500. I pulled it out of my savings for the guy. So what's he do? He reaches in his pocket, and he hands me the $500 cash, and he goes, thanks, man, I appreciate that. Also, when I bought the TV, I didn't want the Blu-ray player that came with it because I wanted this other one. So here. And he gave me the Blu-ray player, too. And I was like, you're a pretty stand-up guy, Todd. but you all know, I mean, it's the opposite of what you're talking about, right? Somebody actually comes through, and it just blew my mind. I, restored my faith in humanity. I mean, it's like when you loan money to family, don't ever expect it back, ever. Like, it's not,
It's gone.
If you do get it back, wow. But if you don't, whatever. But, I remember I was talking with good brother Mark at my mother lodge when we went to raise the dues. We went from $60 to $120. And I realize not everybody is in a comfortable financial situation. But Mark was pretty real with me. He said, yeah, I don't care, man. I'll pay the $120. That's pizza for one night out with me and my whole family when I buy for my kids and their kids. Like here. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, and we need examples like that. But also, when we think about it in a very practical and logical manner, I'd always ask the question, are we providing value? Because once you provide value to your membership, they remember. They tend to remember and they want to pay their dues and they want to be a part of it. Right, but if you're not providing any kind of value, and I'm talking at any level because we have multiple levels, right? We have the dress code, we have a state of meeting dinner. At our lodge, our state of meeting dinner is a 3-course meal, which is a nice salad, a filet mignon with a baked potato and grilled veggies every state of meeting, and dessert, and then the members like to bring wine or stuff like to pair with the filet mignon or the prime rib for $15. Where are you going to get that? Where are you going to get that, right? That's providing value.
Yeah, nowhere. Yeah, that's
nowhere.
Wild.
Nowhere. So this is kind of like one of our staples. And And so we provide a value for that. And people began to show up regularly. And, you know, 25, 30. When members started saying, and then it's, this goes back to the quality versus quantity. When members started saying, hey, how come more people don't show up? They know about this. And I say, hey, we always got to remember quality versus quantity. I would rather prefer 25, 30 than 50 to 100 because once dinner's over, they're going to take off. The half of them are going to take off. They're not even going to come to stay to meeting. So, you know, it's not a fine balancing act, but when you provide value, people tend to hold you more. They think about you more, and they'll like if you call them, hey, you haven't paid your, oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, here you go, and it's there it is. You're not providing any value, and especially with the Further Light in Masonry, with this, and I don't like to call them younger generation. They're just because people are coming in, men are coming in, young and old. They want the esoteric. They do. And that's a strength. That's a strength of Freemasonry. And we are not taking advantage from it because if you read Anderson's Constitutions, anybody does, that thing is esoteric, allegorical, and symbolical throughout. So you can't argue with me that I don't know where you're getting this esoteric from. There's no esoteric in Masonry. What the hell are you talking about? Have you even read Anderson's Constitutions and how that's Kabbalistic, probably Rosicrucian, all kinds of stuff in there. And you're telling me that that's part of our dilemma.
I laugh when you talked about, in my head, I was thinking, I had this exact same correspondence. It was my first year as secretary. And I think that's when I was the master of the lodge. And I got an email from a member saying, I'm not sure that raising the dues by doubling the dues, 160 to 120 bucks, is like equitable because I'm left wondering what the other lodges in our district and area are charging their members. And I said, hey, my response was like brotherly, but truthful, like as you said. And the response was, it's hard to see the value in paying $120 when you don't come to the meeting. I have seen you one time in 6 years. And I go every Monday. And you know what? That was in snail mail. I wrote him a letter back because that's how he wrote me. And the next thing that was coming in the mail, I thought would be a demit. You know what it was? A check for 120 bucks. So, I mean, and I still didn't see him. But I think the message was clear. You know, if you want Waukegan Lodge 78, which was it's the oldest lodge in the area. Every lodge in our area got a charter basically because Waukegan said it was okay, right? This prestigious lodge that was Union Lodge. And then, you know, Waukegan 324, they merged and it was this cool thing. Since the Civil War, this lodge has been around. And, you know, like, you're not going to show up. You're not going to go to the meetings or, you know, I don't know what the deal is, but it's like it's a prestigious lodge, not in the sense that, you know, it's expensive or anything. It's just got a lot of history. And if you want to go to another lodge and pay the bare minimum dues for a lodge, which in Illinois, I think the bare minimum by constitutional standards is like
10 bucks or something.
Yeah, it's like, I think like 20 bucks or something silly. But I mean, it's just wild. You know, when you put it on the line and you get through to people using truth, you get a result. You do. They step up to the plate.
From what I heard, that was applied in you, right? Because that was a combination of strength and truth. You showed strength, you know, through truth. And he felt that. And so what did he do? You know, he checked himself. Oh, crap. You know, here, it's me. Because he's right. And if your lodge is providing value on multiple levels, then it's going to be easier for them to like we've been in debates, so to speak, in our lodge of raising our degree fees to $1,000. But when you first hear that price, you're like, whoa. But then once we break it down and tell you what you're all going to get for your $1,000 first, second and third degrees, ESTA boards, and you know, and I hate to say that here because some maybe prospective members are listening. They're like, oh crap, you know, okay, then we like it to be a surprise. So they can say, holy moly, now I get it, right? On top of that, as prospects, as our charitable contribution to the community, our lodge started something called the Socrates Cafe Trivium Discussion Group, which is our way of promoting the seven liberal arts and sciences into the community, but also more than anything, establishing a place where we can come in and have open discussions. And we continued it during the COVID. When it started, we just went to Zoom and we talked about what is COVID, what is fear, what is death, what is science, you know, is science right? Politics, does the governor have any true authority to make all that? I mean, we just attacked it. And we get into the definitions, the etymology, so that we can understand what's being said and what's being done. So now once they came in, and we tell them, this is part of the seven liberal arts and sciences. This is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, right? This is that. And then once they come in and become members, and then they take the first degree and the second degree, they're like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand the seven liberal arts and sciences and why you promoted it so much, and grammar, logic, and rhetoric as well. So once they become initiated, we continue the Trivium Discussion Socratic Method, but now as an EA, now into the symbols, now into the, yeah, you know, definitions, now into the history, now into the esoteric ideas, and we delve into it, and they're like, holy moly, okay. But you know what? That takes work. That takes effort. That takes commitment. That takes discipline. It's rigorous. And some of the older members that aren't used to this are like, what the hell is this? Well, what is this? This is a masonry. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
That's clutch. I love that. That is a wonderful way to reach out, A, to community, B, to use what we learn in masonry in a practical way in today. And it takes courage to do that kind of stuff. So I applaud you guys. That is excellent.
Thank you. Thank you. And like I said, I applaud you. I don't care who you are. If you're starting a Masonic podcast, you had to have heard Rob and Wins Came You and from the beginning. And no, I remember those early episodes, and then as it got better and better and better, and the quality and the production and the guests and your papers, and some of the papers that you brought up have been excellent. You know, that you just read, because most people, oh man, he's just reading. But if you pay attention, depending if it's that's your cup of tea, then it's excellent. Where else were you going to hear it? You weren't going to take the time, obviously. Obviously, no. We're going to take the time, so just listen to Rob, read what he's going to read, and shut up and listen.
Oh, man, thanks. Thank you. All right, well, Brother Cesar Rubio, host of Masonic Muscle, which you release pretty frequently, so I want to tell everybody to check it out. They're on Google Podcast. I'm also on I'm also looking at his listening on Apple Podcasts. He's there. So far, like 20 episodes almost 20 episodes, and it's fantastic stuff. I want to thank you so much for coming on here and, really talking about the difficult stuff and, just for being truthful with our brothers and having an honest look at some of the things that we can do. But before I let you go, I want to put you on the spot and ask you, give me 1 to 3 things that a brother out there can do today to be more successful.
Number one, take control of your health, hence Masonic Muscle, guys, because that's something that you will take pride in. If you stick to it, and you'll take pride in it, and you look in the mirror, and you'll say, I did this. I did the work. Number two, take accountability of you and your actions and your words. There's something in Freemasonry, the titers, a charge that says, you know, you will set a watch over our thoughts and all kinds of, a sentinel at our lips and over our actions. So take accountability of your own words, thoughts, and actions, because that's part of what's happening right now. That's number two. And number three, if you're a Mason and you're thinking of how can I improve? Well, go to your lodge. See what's going on. See, ask them where you can help. And begin to shed some light and some truth on there. I'm not telling you to go in there and be all rude, because they're going to shut you off. But be that pillar, be that rock of truth for the lodge, so that they can begin to build up the strength themselves that they need. Because all lodges need it. so that you can end up being like Rob, the guys at Roundtable, like the guys. So because everybody needs that. So I like to send a shout out to you, Rob. I know I have, but shout out to you because you've had the strength to persevere through all these years, and you've continued to go on, and you finally pulled the trigger one day and said, you know what, I'm going to do this because no one else is, and someone's got to begin to speak truth and speak wisdom and speak beauty into this fraternity once again, breathe into our, you know, our lungs that were atrophied and getting weak. So those are the three things, and three things, masonry, like we do all things in three. I love it. I love it.
Thank you so much. You really humble me with your words. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and doing this with me. It was something that I would consider a necessary, aggressive topic that I think our listeners, I hope everybody out there listening, you took away some great value in this conversation. You know how to attack things, so to say, in the fraternity for the good, for the better of the craft and your lodges. We're going to put show notes for you guys. If you want to find Brother Caesar's podcast, we're going to have all the links there where you can find that podcast. And we'll put his email in there, too. If you want to, you know, shout out to him and, you know, ask him a question about anything that we talked about or his podcast. So, Brother Caesar Rubio, thank you so much for coming on the program. I, again, can't thank you enough. This has been awesome.
It's been an honor. Thank you, Rob.
All right. How about that interview? I want to, again, thank you all for coming with me this week on this kind of adventure and this conversation we had with Brother Caesar Rubio. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I hope you got roused up a little bit at some of the things that we were talking about. I understand that some of the things that we talk about, some brothers might find that are elitist in ideas, or perhaps that we were being too forceful for a volunteer organization. But I think a couple of things that I want to mention here is that, one, of course, there are always extenuating circumstances, and when those are explained, there is a way to make those things work, whether that's volunteerism, paying dues. Of course, we're going to take care of our members who can't pay dues. It's not, you know, put up or shut up, right? So all of those things we do take into consideration. And of course, the things that we're talking about are the people who are able and willing, who choose not to do the things for whatever the reason might be. So keep that in mind. I want to ask all of our Craftsman Plus to hop in the Facebook group and offer your feedback on the episode. Just put it in the comments. We'll go ahead and you'll see a writing prompt as usual, and I hope you guys all take advantage of that. In the coming weeks, I'm going to be presenting for the Denver Masonica event, which is presented by Denver Lodge Number 5. And if you want to know more, visit www.denver5.org/MASONICA. Masonica, and you'll see there how you can get tickets for that event. I'm not sure if it's going to be all digital or not. I know I'm presenting digitally to them, and I might be with one of the only people that will be there in video form only. But I'll be doing The Legend of Adam's Grave, which will be a really fun presentation, and is open to just about anybody. There's no specific Masonic requirement, let's say. So I want to thank you guys for continuing to perhaps check that. So I want to thank you all for possibly checking that out. Check out Denver 5. They've got some great stuff. I also want to give a shout out to Craftsman Online, who had me on along with John Ruark. We presented at Business Time and talked about some business concept of masonry as their season opener this year. And they've got some great guests lined up. In fact, Angel Millar, I believe, is just now presenting, coming this night. And a bunch of other great guests lined up for this season of Craftsman Online. Please check out them when you have a moment. I think you'll find it an edifying adventure as well. That's it for this week, so I want to thank you all for joining me one more time. Thanks to those producers, fellows, contributors, and our legacy partners for making this show happen. Leave your comments and things in the comment box below, on Facebook, and all across our social networks. And, of course, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.